Welcome to episode 228 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on April 30th, 2021. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Today, Scott listens in as Ben talks through the process of doing an Exchange 2010 cutover migration after an acquisition and the pitfalls he encountered when the time wasn't taken to perform a thorough discovery of the current environment. Scott, we are actually live in Discord right now.
We are. Yeah, like we talked about last week, trying something a little bit new. If you'd like to come and chat with us during shows while we're recording, like if it's a time that's convenient for you, come and join the Discord. Ben, how do people get access to the Discord?
How do they get access? I cannot talk today. This is going to be an interesting podcast episode. They get access to the Discord via a link in our newsletter. So every week we send out, or not the newsletter, but the show notes. Every week we send out an email with all the show notes, links to everything. And for the time being, that is the only place to get the link. We frankly didn't want to leave it too open and get a bunch of spam and who knows what Discord. So if you're on the mailing list, go find the newsletter, find the link in it, use that to join Discord. If you're not on the mailing list, go sign up for the mailing list and watch for the first email and get a link to sign up for Discord. So we have had a few people sign up. We have, I don't know, four or five people here so far. None of them are on today. We did kind of switch up the time today due to some conflicts. So once you're in Discord too, we do have a podcast schedule channel in there, so that you can keep up to date on when we're actually going to be recording any given week. Our goal is always going to be 3:15-ish on Friday afternoons, 3:15 Eastern Standard Time or Eastern Daylight Time, I think technically. But today, unfortunately, we did have a conflict, so we're doing this at 9:15.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's other good stuff in there too. You can chat when we're not recording, and we've put some of the update feeds in there, some of the news that we watch to get topics for the podcast. So hopefully we can build that up, have some fun over there, chat. You can ask questions live. You can corner us when we're live on the mic.
Yeah. When I make all my mistakes and Ben corrects me, then, you know, you too can correct me.
No, usually it's the other way around.
Well, however it goes. But it should be fun today because we're going to talk about Exchange, which means you get to talk a whole bunch. So I probably will not be correcting much that you say today because it's been a hot minute since I've touched an Exchange server.
Yeah.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
So this past weekend, 5 days, well, it's actually been 7 days ago now because I started last Friday. I had an Exchange migration I was going to do. And it was looking like it was actually going to go well. And then some things kind of went a little sideways during the week due to a few different things. So this was an interesting Exchange environment and an interesting migration to kind of plan through. Truth be told, I probably would have done it differently. I think doing it the way I did initially, I thought it was going to go smoother, possibly, but let's talk through it. So there are a couple organizations that were involved here. There is a parent company and they acquired another company. I don't even know when the acquisition happened. It was a while ago. Parent company is sitting on Office 365, primarily just for email. So we're doing a bunch of just Exchange Mailbox, Plan One's child company that they acquired was 500 mailboxes and running on Exchange 2010, which is also part of the complication that comes in here. For the last year, they've been running two separate Exchange environments. Recently, they have decided, okay, we're going to bring all of our email now into Office 365. So child company, parent company, bring them all into the parent company's Office 365. We're going to deprovision Exchange 2010. Okay, that's all well and good. However, we have two disconnected AD environments. So there's no trust set up. There is no way to do Azure AD Connect to bring those users in. So that was our first debate here was, well, do we do set up that trust, get everything set up, do Azure AD Connect, sync all those users up? They actually decided against that. This was the first interesting thing. They deal with patient information, so medical information, and they did not want one Active Directory forest to be able to compromise the other Active Directory forest by having a trust in place.
Sure. Normally, like with acquisitions, you're taking those on because you want the people, the IP, like the things to be there. And one of the reasons that they're successful is because they can like do their jobs and probably have access to things like email, right? So if there's a security concern, maybe do you go back and do like, what was your due diligence? Did you do an audit of like the environment that you bought? Like, are there things that you could do that would bring it up to your standards to be able to establish said trust, to be able to link said identity to said cloud, so that then you could do things like have like just a maybe a simpler like cutover migration, like get them off that old version pretty quick.
Right, exactly. So because we aren't doing that, we kind of have to do a cutover migration anyways, but a cutover, and we ended up deciding to leverage BitTitan for the cutover. I've used it a bunch in the past. It actually works really well. I love BitTitan. When you're doing something like this, you have disconnected, and because it's disconnected, we're essentially moving from one identity to another identity. So they have identity username at olddomain.com, and now they have username at newdomain.com. All of these new usernames got created in the new parent company's Active Directory environment. So 500 brand new accounts, usernames, passwords, everything, and then synced up to Office 365. So let's enter first challenge here. We have 500 credentials to get out to users, 500 users using Outlook, mobile devices, etc. 500 users that need to have now two different accounts logged in and switch over credentials from an old one to a new one. That's just challenge number one, is making sure there's boots on the ground, support staff available to help with all of that. That was all up to their own internal IT team to make sure all of that was planned out. But then we started going through the process of planning for doing that cutover of 500 mailboxes. And this is where it started to get interesting, is that we still need their old email to work. So it's not even like we're going from child company to parent company and child company's domain is going entirely away. Child company has to have all of these aliases up and working in parent company's Office 365 environment. So they're going to switch their default email. Their default email is going to change to the parent company's, but they still need to have these aliases in place. So first thing you run into is, when are we going to add the child company's domain to the parent company? Because we can't do this ahead of time, and we can't even set up all these aliases and mailboxes ahead of time. Because as soon as you bring that second domain into Office 365, Office 365 treats those as being on the same Exchange server, no longer uses MX records or any of that external routing. It just tries to route it all internally to those internal mailboxes. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we start adding that second domain into the Office 365 environment, all of these people are no longer going to get their emails in their old mailbox. At least emails sent from the parent company. Emails sent from anybody else go to the old mailboxes. So now you have emails based on where they're coming from going into two different mailboxes. So we decided, okay, let's wait. We're not going to add this domain to Office 365 until Friday evening when we're going to do the cutover. So what our process ended up looking like, and frankly, it's impossible to do this without any downtime. Friday, 5 p.m., we switched the MX record for child company's domain. So that's starting to go to Office 365 now. Kind of at the same time, within a couple minutes of each other, we added the domain first. Added the domain to parent company first. That's well and good. Validated that domain. Then we went in and switched MX records to go from old company to new company, or child company to parent company. So now all this email as MX gets propagated throughout is starting to go to this new environment. However, none of those aliases are there because we can't add aliases and sync those up to Office 365 until that domain is actually up there. So we ended up with...
Yeah, it's a chicken and an egg
thing. It totally is. You can't add the domain until you're ready to cut over, but you can't add the aliases until the domain's there. So I had it all scripted out. So it went relatively smoothly. Ran a script, it churned through 500 mailboxes, added secondary aliases because we had all of those in a CSV file, threw them all into Active Directory, forced an Azure AD Connect sync, and shoved most of those aliases up to Office 365. And this is where a few things started to go a little sideways. From my perspective, I should have looked at a few things a little bit better. We asked about doing some discovery. They were like, nope, we just want to migrate and we want to get them up there. There was a little bit of a, looking back at it, we should have taken some more time. Because a couple things we found. One, parent company had created a bunch of contacts on-prem with the same aliases that they added. So when they tried to sync, they couldn't sync because contacts had already synced and existed. So we ended up with several users that the alias didn't come up because the contact was there that had been synced from on-prem. Then we found out they had also created some cloud-only contacts for same type of thing, aliases. So the cloud-only contacts were blocking some other aliases. And this is one of those, when we had talked planning this migration out, I was like, okay, anything else, shared mailboxes, public folders, anything else that's in this old domain that we have to think about when we move all these up? Nope, nothing else. We're all good. Well, come to find out, they had created distribution groups. Come to find out there was something else. There were distribution groups that were created in the parent company containing those contacts that were created in the parent company for those users that were previously child company mailboxes. Guess what happens when you delete contacts so aliases sync up that are in distribution groups?
I know where this is going.
Our distribution groups suddenly were depopulated. So now we have all these empty distribution groups with nobody in them because those contacts got deleted. So the aliases could get put up there. But again, you could have scripted this out ahead of time, but you run into the chicken and the egg, right? Because you can't put these users in the distribution groups and have them work because the aliases aren't there. But you can't put the aliases there until the contacts are deleted. I mean, maybe you leave them in place and you put the contact there and then you put the user in there. But then you're delaying having those aliases added to those users even longer while you populate these distribution groups. So it ended up with a little bit of a mess there with some of those distribution groups that had contacts in them. We worked through that. And then we, frankly, had users that had started that had changed from when they gave me the additional list of users. And because we're trying to keep all these in sync and have multiple user accounts, there were frankly some user accounts that just got missed that didn't get created in the parent Active Directory environment. So then we ended up with like a handful, 5-10 mailbox or users that didn't exist. So we couldn't migrate those mailboxes. So it was definitely some lessons learned here when you're going to do a cutover migration and something like that. There's some of those things that I mentioned where you really do end up in a chicken and an egg when you're going to do these cutover migrations, especially when you have some of these objects that have duplicate aliases in both domains. Oh, that was the other thing we ran into.
So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud.
I got one more thing that came into play with all of this. They sent over a list of old users and said, we're going to first initial last name in this new environment. So go create users. This is going to be their UPN. Well, there was a little bit of a breakdown in communication. Again, this is something I should have gone in and maybe double checked a little bit closer on my end, but it was 500 mailboxes. Child company sent parent company these usernames. First initial and last name, it was big enough. There were some conflicts. So parent company started creating these as first initial, last name one, first initial, last name two, et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't communicated back.
Just what you want to see.
So now we go set up this migration with BitTitan, and all of a sudden, because there's no validation, I'm just looking at initials and last names when I'm setting up all these email addresses. I don't have first names, last names, all the context. We did, and fortunately, this only happened, I think, to two people where we migrated the wrong mail from the wrong source mailbox to the wrong parent mailbox. Same email address, two different people, because there was a one or a two that had been added to the end of a username. Again, some definite lessons learned, some things that I have added to my list to, okay, no matter what people say, go double check these few things. The other thing I would say, if you're going to merge domains like this, yeah, you can do these cutover migrations. I think I would push a lot harder in the future on one of these to do hybrid.
Yeah, it's been my experience that it's worth going down that path, even with the older versions of Exchange, to get them to where they need to be, to be able to kind of slow roll your way through that migration, right? Do subsets of users rather than all 500 at once, especially in those environments where customers don't want you to perform that discovery, right? If they're not willing to give you the time to do something like run a script to enumerate contacts and, you know, check for the conflicts with the new aliases that you need to add, like, you can't help that. But maybe one of that, like, maybe one of those blocks of work in there becomes like, okay, we can't do discovery, then this isn't a path we can go down. We have to go this other way. And that means you're going to need to deploy these servers and do these things.
Yep. Exactly. And it helps with the identity. It would have helped with some of those conflicts because all that stuff starts showing up earlier. And you also have a little bit of a rollback, right? Because we wouldn't have had to, there would have been a lot of things there in terms of the mail routing and in terms of rolling back and missing users where those mailboxes, whether they were on-prem or in Office 365, would have continued to work the whole time because that mail is flowing in the background. And then when you're ready, you can actually do that cutover rather than trying to time it all out. And
yep. It's also more seamless from the device side of things, right? You ended up with new users, new user IDs, and new passwords. And that's not a great place to be. Like, every time I've seen that done, it's usually somebody in the background going, oh, well, my users use Outlook on their mobile devices, so they're going to know how to do this. Like, obviously, they know how to sign into an email account, right? And then you think about like a body of 500 people who are not in IT, and I can think of some people in IT who still would be messed up by that flow. Like, it's not an intuitive thing. So you have to have a good deal of like user empathy along the way there to be able to recognize that saying like, even if we write the most robust instructions for 500 people, maybe two are going to follow them. Like, maybe yep. two. And that's on a good day.
Yeah. I agree. And I would definitely say there is doing a cutover like this versus doing something that's hybrid. I think I would almost spend, I would dare to say that doing this cutover, you should actually do more planning than if you're going to do a hybrid environment, just because of a lot of that, because of the crazy updates to the users, because of this stuff, because they're not connected environments, it's not quite as easy to see where those conflicts are going to come up from and how to recover from them. So I think there was a little bit of a thought of, oh, we'll just create the mailboxes, we'll cut them over. And again, I think I should have pushed for another couple, 3 weeks of just planning and really going through everything with a fine-tooth comb to try to uncover more of these details.
Yeah. And it's not to say that you'd like, you know, given that time, you could have absolutely scripted that out. Like, it didn't have to be a manual, horrible process, yep. right? That can be something like a CSV that maps, here's my old contact, here's the new alias, and here's the
distribution group.
Distribution yep. groups and lists that they are a member of. Okay, let's go through, let's enumerate the CSV the first time, delete all the contacts, and then let's delete all the contacts from all the distribution groups. All right, we make sure that we can sync and we're good. Now, you know, step two, add the aliases. Okay, we added the aliases. Now that we've added the aliases, let's go back and add them all back to be members of the distribution groups that they were a part of. You know, you can get there and it's still time consuming. And like you said, there's opportunities for, or you have to think about potentially being offline for mail flow for a period of time for those segments of users, but you just would have had way more flexibility at the end of the day. You could have even done like cohorts of users and like bumped them through and seen what happened. Like, who are people who can stay offline longer? Who are the people who need to be online the quickest?
Yep.
Hybrid would have been a ton easier for you.
Right. Well, and I think that's the hard part. I don't know if I would try to do this for more than 500 users. Or if I'd even try to do it for 500 users, again, when it's more of this corporate merger type environment, like if you're doing a cutover for an entire company, that's one thing because you're not going to have conflicts. You're doing a cutover from on-prem to a brand new environment. But when you're doing this cutover with a merge, one, you frankly just run into timing. Like, to be able to get all of that data moved quickly, doing a cutover, we got it done. Like, I got all the email moved over the course of the weekend, but it was tight. It's just, like you said, trying to support that many or do that many all at once versus doing groups of people at a time. And even from a testing perspective, because some of these scripts, I could kind of test it out a little bit, but some of those chicken and the egg things where you can't really do this until this is in place means there's also not a way to test it until that's in place. So you can kind of test it. You can use some test environments. There's some ways you can come up with to kind of validate, do like some write outputs and make sure that what's getting outputted is mm-hmm. being written properly. But even some of those scripts, I was like, okay, I think I have this. I have done as much testing as I possibly can without actually running this live. Now I just have to wait until I do this step and run this script. And maybe do like 5 minutes, test it against one or two users. Yep, we're good. Let's just let it loose. That was the other thing that I found challenging with doing a cutover of this many all at once was just you script it out, but there's a lot of unknowns yet from that testing perspective.
Yeah, I feel for you there.
Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry Software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry Software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email.
It was interesting.
I don't miss the days that I used to do exchange migrations, and you're making me very happy that I'm out of that world.
And then to compound it all, like we did this, we started it Friday. Monday, all the users come in. And then Monday morning, there was a potential compromising of some networks and some systems tied to all of this. So this team of IT support staff was getting pulled between supporting 500 users and trying to get to the bottom of this potential compromise. And I don't know, they may have had a worse week than I did. I'm pretty sure they had a worse week than I did. That was just unfortunate timing.
Yeah, sounds that way.
Yes, that was just unfortunate timing. I think some of this could have gone a little smoother too had that not occurred. And all of us could have been dedicated to this instead of them getting pulled in two different directions.
Yeah, I guess that's the other interesting thing there is, even if you, like you said, even if you do script that out and have it ready to go, it is still going to be a game of bodies at some point, like either fixing issues as they're coming up kind of with the migration on the back end or communicating to users on the front end when they're all coming in on Monday morning.
Yep.
Like you do need a allocation of person hours there. And that means having bodies on hand to make that work.
Yes. And then going back to hybrid, had we been in hybrid and we planned to maybe set it all up or make a bunch of changes, then it's, you have a little bit more of that backup plan. By Monday morning, it was too late. Like it was, we got to just push through this. Where if you're in hybrid, it's like, okay, let's just wait a minute. We have 400 users. We had these other things happen. Let's just kind of put a pause on as much as we can. Everything can keep working in hybrid, and then we can go keep doing cohorts once we get through this. So I think there's a lot of things to be said when you're, dealing with this many mailboxes of spending that time to do a hybrid environment.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that one.
So that was like all 30 minutes of our time.
that was a good amount of it there. But think how like cathartic an experience that was for you to talk all the way through it.
That was. Well, and I need to sit down too, and I would need to write this down. I'll probably go listen to our own episode and take my own notes for it, because there were definitely some lessons learned for me in terms of things I could do and things that I'm going to advise clients to do in the future if they want to attempt something like this.
Yeah, so it's not all lost. Think about the potential repeatable IP that comes out of that process. Like if you did script out those portions around deleting the contacts, adding the aliases, managing the distribution groups, things like that, like it's not all salty water. Like you're okay. You got some good stuff there.
Absolutely. So with that, should we wrap it up for the day? And we can come back and circle back to news, or was there anything, any news things you wanted to mention yet today before we call it a day?
I'm trying to think if there was anything like huge.
Oh, we talked about build. We should mention build just so people can go registered.
We should mention build.
Microsoft Build is announced. Registration is live. It will be, come on, website.
It's May 25th Thanks. Through the 27th.
Yes, May 25th through the 27th. My build. .microsoft.com will get you to the site. It is all virtual again, so you can go register. It is free. See what Microsoft has to say. Again, it tends to be developer focused. I mean, it's their developer conference, but even as an IT pro, I like to watch it. There's always still stuff I get from it. So because it's free, because it's hybrid, definitely go register, check it out.
Yeah. If anything, just register even if you're not going to attend during the event, so you have easier access to the recordings and the session catalog, things like that along the way. There should be some interesting stuff at Build.
Yes, absolutely. So, all right, if you don't have anything else.
I don't. I'm going to head out to the other side of Florida and drive across to the Gulf. I'm going to go snorkel with some manatees. So I'm going to do socially distanced snorkeling with manatees. We'll see how that
sounds
goes.
Like
I'll let you know. If I come back next week and I have some new weird injury or something, you'll know how well it went for me.
So to say, or if next week I got to do the podcast and you don't show up at all, you just decided to go retire and swim with the manatees and stop working.
If it's good enough, I might consider going down that path. Being the manatee boat captain.
There you go. Sounds good. All right. Well, go enjoy the rest of your Friday. If you want to partake, nobody ever showed up today, Scott. We have to encourage people. We should come up with a way to entice people to come listen to us in Discord. Or again, I know it's early too for certain locations, but go sign up for the newsletter, join us in Discord. We will be live here again as well next week. But for now, enjoy your weekend and we'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.